How did you get my number?
Maybe it's best we meet in person. I can tell you everything I know.
Piss off.
This is the Extra Hot Grape Podcast, episode 238, for the week of February 11th, 2019. I am Special Bowl of Soup, David T. Cole, and I'm here with Idiot Abroad, Sarah D. Bunting.
Is that Jim Walsh?
Shady Coroner, Tara Ariano.
One gunshot on wet body.
And cute tattooed lesbian, Allison Lohuff.
It's not about you, Dad.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Extra Hot Grape. Before we get into it, yes, more site business very quickly, if I can manage it. Patreon, thank you very much for your continued support. And we're sort of creeping up on our second goal, which is very exciting. Because Patreon sort of has a rolling payout, we figured we would take February to figure out what we want to do and start the episodes in March. And then in the distant future, when we're all about to explode because we're traveling too close to the sun, we will stop Patreon. And then the next month after that, we'll also have free stuff. Quickly on Patreon, if you are a Patreon supporter, please do go to the Patreon website and check out our Patreon-only posts there to let everybody know what we're doing is, assuming we hit our second goal before March, we are going to, at start, do sort of what we're talking about before, larger mini or maxi extra hot great episode. And then for the second episode to start, what we were thinking of doing is me, Dan Casino, and Omar Gallega are starting a pop culture quiz podcast, kind of like Game Time, a bit different, but in that vein. And what we thought we'd do is we would start it, sort of like preview it, do a pilot season on the Patreon feed. And if you want to be on that show as a contestant, you can do that. So go to the Patreon site. There's a post, and in that post, there's a link to sign up for that with a Google form. If you're interested, all you need is some time, Skype, and a microphone, and a good connection, and the will to destroy all others in your quest for pop culture dominance. So if that is of interest to you and you are a Patreon supporter, do check that out on patreon.com/extrahotgrate, or go to extrahotgrate.com, click on the Patreon link, and that'll get you there too. And with that, I throw it to Sarah.
Hello, and welcome back, Allison Lohuff.
Yay!
Yay! There it is. To discuss the latest Amazon Prime streaming bomb, White Dragon, formerly known as Strangers, and I'm not sure really why they changed the name, from when it aired on ITV last year. Professor Jonah Mulray's life is turned upside down when his wife Megan is killed in a car crash in Hong Kong. When he goes to look into the wreck and retrieve her body, things and their marriage are not what they seem. Prime noir ensues. I had high hopes for this one, but my husband and I kept pausing it to discuss why it was so annoying.
Like,
we couldn't
here.
Put our finger exactly on what it was. There was this, like, I think that it was this sort of, he doesn't know, does he? Like, losty. They just kept raising more questions and about people's loyalties instead of ever answering anything.
Right.
Plus, some of the characters that had the most charisma didn't get enough to do. I'm speaking, of course, of Detectives Man Bun and Cheekbones.
Exactly.
I watched the whole thing hoping that it would turn it around, and it never quite did. Allison, as the founder and chief roller of the Wheel of Murder, why was this unsatisfying for you?
I had the same, like, identical experience with this. My husband and I watched it together, and we were also very excited about it. It had some really fine, you know, British Hey, It's That Guys in it. Mm-hmm. And the Asian cast also was just, like, fantastic. It was terrible. It wasn't like the idea was good. Like, I was excited when I read about it because I was like, okay, Hong Kong, this is awesome. Like, you're going to show all this Hong Kong stuff and all these people doing these cool things and cool settings. It could not have been more boring. It might as well have been in Grand Rapids. No offense to Grand Rapids. But it
apologies.
I mean, it looked, it looked so nice. I mean, like the cinematography was nice, but yes, the plotting was just abysmal. And I had such high expectations. I can say it was abysmal rather than just like disappointing.
Yeah. It just pointlessly Byzantine.
Yeah.
I felt. And then at the end, they had opportunities to do something different that they didn't use. I didn't think they made good enough period use of the Asian actors. I feel like Dave and Tara did not watch the whole thing. Is that true?
Yeah. So here's what happened to our house. We watched one and Tara's like, do you want to watch more? I'm like, yeah, I feel like I need to give it a second one to like get going.
Right.
And then the second one was over. It's like, oh, they got to be building to something. Let's do another one. So we watched three. Mm-hmm. And then I was like, Tara, this show is like watching a pot. It's just never going to boil, is it?
Okay, so that's exactly right.
Yeah.
Tara went, do you want me just to read what happens in the show? And I said, well, here's my bet. A, B, and C happens. And it turns out I was pretty much right. So I called the end of the show from episode 3. I look back on what I've watched right now, and I can't help but think that this should have been an Ashley Judd movie from like 2001.
Oh, so perfect.
Yeah.
Dumb premise, gussied up by a good setting and good production values. But at the end of the day, you're just like, well, that's an Ashley Judd film for you. I hope she gets away with it in the end, or I hope she gets vengeance in the end, or I hope she figures out why your husband's dead in the end.
Yeah. I will say this was the only story where I thought the bigamist, it made sense to complicate your life that much. The Megan, who is the dead wife, and we do get confirmation, unlike in so many of these shows, like we see her body, she is dead.
Right.
But she has had a husband in Hong Kong for 20 years and also for the last 3 years, a husband in London. And she's been splitting her time between these two places for her job. And I was like, all right, well, whatever. You get bored. Like, every other story of like someone trying to be a bigamist with like wives on the opposite sides of town. Like, come on now. That's needlessly complicating your life. This, like, there would be no way these two dudes would ever necessarily find out about each other. And actually, I was surprised that that Jonah even did hear about her death, since she did have a husband like on the island, and how they even tracked her to him was never really explained. Like, that was part of what bugged me about it. Like, there were so many plot threads that were just dropped. And also, like, Sarah called herself idiot abroad in her intro. Like, Jonah is, at least in the three episodes we saw, so dumb and naive. Like, yeah. How do you take the voicemail with the incriminating gunshot on it and leave it with the police? Like, you don't send it to anyone. You don't make a copy for yourself. You don't, like, you know, whatever. Like, there are any number of things he could have done with that.
And he's supposed to be a smart guy, because in the first scene, yeah, we see him doing a lecture. He is a professor at a university. Well, so
then after you stop watching, all of a sudden, after being there for like 5 days, he hasn't just acclimated. And he doesn't just have enough money to stay there, but apparently he can stay there indefinitely despite having got emergency travel papers because he was dumb and lost all his shit. He knows the city despite Lau, the daughter, being like, oh, you'll never get to X location. Once he's found it once, apparently now he knows the whole city, having been on a bus. He knows how to scam cabs. The next thing you know, he's like Bond.
Yeah. Which I was thinking, is this why they named it, they renamed it White Dragon? Like, is he supposed to be the White Dragon? But he's the only white person in it. So like, I thought, how ridiculous is this? There at one point in the later episodes, I think it's the last one, one of the bad guys is like talking to the head bad guy. And he's like, he's a lecturer. We have nothing to worry about from this guy. And, you know, Chris got all offended. My husband's a professor, but he's like, you know what? They're right. Like, he's the worst example of an academic, like dumbass, you know, and it was like he was.
Well, let me ask this, Allison, how often does Chris go out of town without you?
Well, this is a good question, because it's kind of a lot. And he has been to some international destinations in the last couple of years. And I'm just wondering if there's another Mrs. Huff out there.
Why stop at one? Yeah, I also kind of, like, every time they started doing a flashback, which, like, I'm not a big flashback fan, but I would have been interested in some, like, bigamy world building.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And And especially, but then that kind of turns out to be a big MacGuffin that isn't. Sorry. I'm not that sorry.
Are you?
Yeah. What I'm really sorry for is the Hong Kong Fooey headline that's going to be on this podcast.
JK, not sorry about that either. You said it before I could.
I thought it was like so that she could like be a spy.
Yeah.
Or that she was some kind of double agent, because wasn't he teaching in some, he was teaching some like, I don't know, politics thing, that it was like, well, maybe she's, maybe he's also part of a think tank and she's a spy. No, just bored, which is fine. But then like have some processy stuff about how you manage to keep like, I don't know, baby socks from straying into your luggage. I mean, I guess the kid was grown up enough by then, but still.
It's just a shame. Like my, and my favorite character in the show was the husband in Hong Kong. David Chen is the character's name, but played by the actor Anthony Chow Sang Wong. He was like, so like compared to the rest of them, so charming, like his just totally, and it was probably a language thing, but his delivery was like super deadpan on most of it. And just, he seemed so frustrated the entire time, which was sort of vibing with my general feeling about the whole thing. And I just thought, I feel you, dude. So he was my favorite one.
No, I'm a Detective Suey guy myself. Cause yeah, he was like, the Van Buren of Hong Kong.
A lot of eye rolls.
Yeah. You were right to stop after three. That's where we should have stopped.
All right. Well, before we get off White Dragon, guys, it's coming. And when you hear it, you're going to know what to do. But I want to start doing this in unison. So get your mouths ready. Get your brains ready.
Let the wide stick give you the edge. Speed Stick Super Dry Antiperspirant.
White Dragon. Well, terrible. Terrible.
Domer. I'm so sorry.
All right. From White Dragon, Sarah, where do we go next?
We are going to the mini Wheel of Murder, because just in case we weren't satisfied with this international crime product.
We were.
We sure weren't. But we wanted to give ourselves a safety net for discussion and talk about some properties that we do like and recommend from around the globe. Tara, what have you brought us on the wheel?
Well, first, hat tip to Allison Lohuff, who created the Wheel of Murder feature on our website, previously.tv, and you can still find all of those archives of her making recommendations of various international crime dramas. So with that spirit, we go forward into these. So I have one jokey one and one serious one. I watched the season two mid-season premiere of Private Eyes. This is the Jason Priestley PI show. It's on ION, aka Sarah.
The channel.
This is the show.
Also
where,
home to Flashpoint.
Yes. And it's basically all like crime and Canadian hospital shows, but and some Law and Order is. I think they have a marathon on Wednesdays and Thursdays, maybe. Anyway. Private Eyes is a show where Jason Priestley plays a former hockey player, because it's Toronto and that's the law. And now he's a PI and he has a partner named Angie Everett, who is played by an actor who I didn't recognize. Her name is Cindy Sampson, which is the most generic 90210 like tertiary character name ever. Totally. But that's the actor's actual name. So this episode involved them getting called in to investigate a throne fight in women's boxing. And, you know, it was surprisingly, I texted Sarah while I was watching it. And I was like, it doesn't suck. Like it, and it doesn't. It's very competent, like USA original USA original from like 7 years ago caliber procedural. Yeah. It's like that well made. With all that implies, like if this came on and you were in a hotel, it's a very good hotel TV. If you had a choice of like eight channels and this was on one of them, like it would be a perfectly fine way to spend an hour. Like it's not offensive. And like 90210 leaning into Priestley's ease at playing self-righteousness in the later years with all of his journalisming, having him be able to interrogate people in a PI context also plays to his limited strengths. So Private Eyes, surprisingly competent. But my real recommendation is one that had sort of been in the back of my mind for a while. This is an import currently on HBO Go, imported from HBO Asia, called Miss Sherlock, and this is Sherlock Holmes gender flipped in Tokyo in present day. Have you seen it, Allison?
No, but that sounds great.
It's really good. We watched two. It hews very closely to the source material. Like there's a Sherlock. She's socially maladjusted. There's a Watson, except on this, her name is Watto. So they call her Watto-san, which I thought was cute. she is a doctor. She has come back from a war zone. Although she was volunteering in Syria, she's not, she was not enlisted. There's a Mrs. Hudson type. Miss Sherlock rents a room at 221B, and it's like very Victorian. Like the set decoration on her apartment is very handsomely done. It's very Dave. It's like I watched the first about 3 minutes of it thinking like, well, I'll just see how it is. And then if it seems like something Dave would want, I'll just save it and we can watch it together. And like 3 minutes in, something crazy happens in the premiere where I was like, oh, yeah, this is up Dave's alley. So it's really cleverly done. The mysteries are smart and good in the way that you would want a Sherlock Holmes story to be, and like very, you know, esoteric and complex and, you know, with lots of switchbacks and stuff. And they dress her amazingly. She's got a great like choppy bob haircut, and in her first scene when we see her, she's wearing like beautifully tailored dress pants in like the same kind of tweedy print as the Deerstalker hat, which is like brilliant, with silver pumps. Like she's gorgeous. It's so fun to watch. I really, really recommend it. Dave, you watched the same two episodes. What did you think?
I did enjoy it a lot. One of the differences between this interpretation and other recent interpretations, such as UK one, is Sherlock is allowed to be a little impish here.
Yes, she's very mischievous.
It just gives it a little spark that I feel like the other ones are missing. And I did enjoy it quite a bit. It's always fun to see another culture's take on something. And it's changed enough that it seems like a tour, you know, like you're a tourist going with Sherlock, you know, as she solves crimes in Japan, which I really enjoy. And you're right. I think if you watch the first 10 minutes of the pilot and the mechanism by which crimes are being committed in the first episode doesn't hook you, just turn it off because you're dead inside.
I'll also say the score is very like borrows shamelessly from the most recent BBC version. Yeah,
absolutely.
The Benedict Cumberbatch one. Yep. It'll definitely remind you of that. But yeah, Miss Sherlock on HBO Go. Check it out. That's my rec. Allison.
Okay, I have two also. One is in French, and it is streaming on MHC Choice. It is Agatha Christie's Criminal Games, and I wrote about it for that site. When they assigned it to me and I went to watch it, I was a little bit like, I don't really want to watch Agatha Christie in French. Like, that doesn't make any sense. Like, you can't do that. You know, I just feel like the Englishness of that, of those stories is part of it. So I was not feeling the whole idea. Also, the detective, they are based on her stories, of course, but the detectives are wholly new. Like, they're invented for this series.
Oh.
So it's a detective superintendent and a young woman reporter. And I have to say, like, it's one of the best things I've ever seen, and best Christie interpretations. It is so visually rich and just very clever and just wonderfully done. If you like watching TV in another language, which I don't mind now, I handle the subtitles very well. It's so enjoyable. And it's set in like the early 50s, and just the clothes and just the period of it is just fantastic. And I loved it. Very charming and very funny.
Cool.
And I also brought one that is not foreign, or not a foreign language. And it's a show called No Offense. And it's right now it's on Acorn. It stars Joanna Scanlon, who was in like The Thick of It and Getting On, and a ton of she's a British comedian. She's in a ton of things. It's a police drama set in Manchester, and just fantastic. Like, it's a little bit funnier than, say, something like Happy Valley or another female led cop drama, It's not a comedy. It's sort of a dramedy, and it's excellent. Don't see a lot set in Manchester, so that's really fun. The accents are just like off the wall, and I absolutely love it. And we've watched all seasons of it and can't wait for the next one to roll out over here.
Ooh, awesome.
Speaking of Happy Valley, I love Happy Valley. Allegedly, there is a third series in the works one day. I am not buying it. And I feel like that's definitely going to be a property where the long wait in between is going to have that Sherlock effect where it's disappointing. Mm-hmm. But the first two series are excellent. And if you haven't checked them out, I recommend it.
They're on Netflix, right?
Yes. Okay. Because we have been using Netflix's little More Like This feature to try to find something to replace Happy Valley mm-hmm. in our hearts.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Failure.
Oh, no.
Wallander. Hinterland, we just tried the other day. So
I liked Hinterland.
I mean, we liked Hinterland, but it wasn't right. It wasn't Happy Valley. And I think we just need to adjust our expectations downwards. So what ends up happening is we'll watch one episode of this new thing we haven't seen yet. And then we'll get back to the 628 seasons of Midsummer Murders.
Yay!
We're slowly working our way through, which talk about hotel TV. And it's very, like, especially the early seasons, it looks extremely cheap. There's a lot of, like, dumb humor and coincidences involving landlines. And, you know, I have a sort of side drinking game involving the word vicar. And how many vicar and how many times that comes up.
Sure.
And the best part of Midsummer Murders is that once you have been watching it for even, I don't know, three episodes, you enjoy the Midsummer Murders plot bot Twitter account.
Oh yeah.
That much more. And it's so, oh my God, it's so funny. Like, I don't know what is wrong with Midsummer, but there's always some visiting group of tourists involving some extremely obscure hobby, like butterfly collecting or
sure, you know,
mushroom foraging. And the Midsummer Murders bot always picks the most amazing obscure hobby plus bizarre death. And my favorite is when they drown in an upside down church bell. I love it. So I recommend not only Midsummer Murders, which is, like, despite how baroquely murdery it is extremely soothing, but the Midsummer Murders bot as well. Actually, you don't even have to watch the show. I will link to that in the show notes. It is great. Dave.
Okay, so I have a show called Money Heist here in the States. It is on Netflix. It is originally from Spain. They have two seasons out, or two parts out, and a third part coming to Netflix this year. It's an interesting animal. It is a heist series, and the heist is a group of thieves are trying to occupy the Spanish mint in order to print millions and billions of dollars of euros. So they're going for, like, this extended week-long occupation of the building and its workers so that they could basically just print all the money in the world during that time. So it's untraceable. They put whatever serial numbers they want on it. And why I found this show actually much better than other crime shows on offer right now is they manage to not fall into the trap of the heist screenplay, which is usually if you go into a heist screenplay and they explain the plan, it's going to go to shit. And if they don't explain it, you know it's going to go perfectly, and then they will show you the mechanics after the fact. That's usually the way it works. Mm-hmm. This one really does have it both ways. Because it's such an extended heist, they are allowed to win some and lose some, have successes and failures, all while sort of bouncing back and forth from the past to the present very effectively. So it keeps you on your toes. You learn about the characters in sort of this Lost-esque manner and pace, which is satisfying. And I just found it to be, like, a really solid afternoon on the weekend watch. We blew through everything Netflix had to offer, which is the start and seeming conclusion to this heist. And I read that the next season is going to be a different heist, which is good.
With a new cast or the same cast?
Who knows? Because I only really found one article that explained it. And you never know if this person is just talking out of their ass. But they said, like, the professor, who is the mastermind, will cook up another heist. I'm all for it because the professor is a great character, and Tara thought he was very dreamy. Yes, Tara?
Oh, yeah, he's super hot. I followed him on Instagram immediately. His name is Alvaro Monte. He's a real fox. Yeah, what I liked about the plot, what Dave said was right. And the other thing is that sometimes what seems like a setback is actually part of the plan, and you don't find that out until later. So there's, like, some things that pay off in different ways. But, yeah, it's great. It has a very kind of 70s-ish feel in its look and feel. Yeah, it was super fun to watch. It's great, really well cast, and super interesting, and kind of an amazing plan as you see it all laid out.
Yeah, two knocks against this series, which are not spoilers. One, this series has a lot of problem with audio. There are scenes, for example, that take place in a bathroom stall with somebody else standing right outside the stall, where two people are in the stall talking at full volume somehow without the person outside hearing. There's a lot of that, which is typical of TV, but I just feel like, you know, in 2019, we should be smarter about that kind of thing. Just have them whisper, just have them, like, you know, talk with their hands more. You know, these are easy solves, but they refuse to do it. And it happens a lot in this series in the second half.
There's a scene where someone is, like, part of their plan is they have to duct tape a bunch of stuff to themselves also in the bathroom. And so, like, the audio ducks out and they have voiceover on top of it to, like, disguise the fact that, like, ripping duct tape is loud as hell. Like, that's not something that you can do clandestinely.
The other, it's not really a knock, but, you know, because it is Netflix and we all tend to skip past the intro credits with that handy button, just listen to it once, because there's, like, moments in the song that I swear to God feel like they were from 30 Rock's Kidnap song. You know, I am kidnapped. It's just like, it's like, what is this? So that's enjoyable too. But yeah, I highly recommend Money Heist. I'm really looking forward to the next part. It was one of those, like, out of the blue discoveries.
Yeah, it was
like,
great.
Yay. And that concludes our international Wheel of Murder. But the TV recommendations do not stop there. We are now going around the dial. Something we've been watching on TV recently that is probably not murder related. Tara, you start.
Yeah, no one gets murdered in season 3 of One Day at a Time. Spoiler.
that would be a twist.
It would be very different. The show is back. You know, it's season 3. There's not much to say. It's still great. If you like the seasons 1 and 2, you will like season 3. That seems like damning it with faint praise. But, like, for a sitcom to be this solid still this many years in and with so many potential traps it's set itself that it could trip up, it's so assured and such a delight to watch. This season in particular, they handle Elena's first time with her, as they call it, them significant other, because her partner is non-binary, so they have a whole discussion about, like, preferred pronouns and what to, you know, Elena is Sid's girlfriend, but Sid is not Elena's girlfriend for obvious reasons, blah, blah, blah. And that episode also features a cameo from Glenn Scarpelli, who was in the later scenes of the original season, which is super fun. And they also have an update on Schneider's sobriety, such that, you know, he's maybe not so much. And we finally get to meet his dad, who I hadn't read who played him. And to see who it is, I mean, I won't spoil it in case no one else has read it either, but it's a great show. My one slight criticism of the premiere, which first of all felt like it was maybe aired out of sequence because it was sort of self-contained. It involves the funeral of someone that we've never met and a bunch of family members coming back that we've also never met who suspiciously were not at the Kinsis. Fine. But it features Stephanie Beatriz and Melissa Fumero from Brooklyn Nine-Nine and Gloria Estefan with some really flagrant age fraud. To wit, Gloria Estefan is supposed to be playing Lydia's sister. When in fact, I know they age down Rita Moreno for this part, but, like, she's 26 years older than Gloria Estefan in real life. And, like, the whole story with the Melissa Fumero character is that she was, you know, best cousin friends with Penelope. She taught her the Rhythm Nation choreography when, in fact, Melissa Fumero was 7 when that album came out and Justina Machado was 17. So, like, just, you know, it doesn't really impinge on the story, but did I notice and look up all of their ages? Yes. So that was a little bit annoying, but I understand why they would front load the season with that episode, you know, because it's the most guest starry one. But yeah, we watched them all this weekend. Dave, your thoughts?
My only knock is that I felt at times they were going through an important issues checklist, and I kind of wish they split mm-hmm. things up a little bit more. Like the first half of the season was very after school special in subject matter, and it just kind of felt a little formulaic by three quarters into the season. That's all. I mean, there were still fine episodes, but I just kind of felt it was a little heavy for what that series should be. I mean, I feel like they've always done that. I just feel like the ratio was off, or at least the pacing was off for that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. For my plug, one of the podcasts that Sarah and I just recorded is still not out. So instead, I will re-plug my recaps of I Am the Night, TNT's true crime docudrama show over at Decider. We will link that in the show notes.
All right, Allison, what do you have?
I've been watching on BET this new show called American Soul. It's from the creators of American Dreams, that show that was on years ago. This is about the history of Soul Train, and it's a fictionalized account of the life of Don Cornelius and the life of the people who created Soul Train. And I started watching it. It just had two episodes come out so far. And I started watching it, one, because I think I've seen every episode of Soul Train. Like, I watched it from, you know, when I was a young child. All through its run, it ended in 2006, which is just wild to think how long. It was on from, like, 1971 to 2006. It's crazy.
I don't think I knew it even ended.
It just seems like thing. It's in the world, right? But a few years ago, I don't know if you guys remember, Don Cornelius took his own life. And the show starts with that scene and then tells the rest through flashback. It's really, really interesting. I mean, it's not like deep into American history, but it shows how difficult it was for him to get this going and what a hustler he was and how hard he had to work to make it happen. It has some modern day R&B stars who come back and play these, you know, iconic musicians, like Kelly Rowland is playing Gladys Knight, which is sort of a genius bit of casting. And she sings really, really well. Now, she's not Gladys Knight, but she does her own singing. And I mean, she sings really well, and she physically resembles her. And it's really kind of cool to see that. And she has obviously worked very hard to get some of the mannerisms right. And Gladys Knight was the first artist to perform on Soul Train. So there's a lot of sort of history to discuss there. Michelle Williams, also from Destiny's Child, is later in the season going to play Diana Ross, which is really cool.
Oh, man.
And there's a couple of other people that are scheduled to come on. So Cinqua Walls, who was on Friday Night Lights and some other big things that I can't think of right now, plays Don Cornelius, and he's just like so good. Like, he's so smooth. He's this really tall guy, and he just looks it. The costuming is so perfect. Like, Don Cornelius used to wear those suit jackets that like came all the way to the floor practically, and like everything's like these crazy colors and just the 70s excess of everything, and the afros and the dancing is just on point. So I really am enjoying it. It's on BET.
Cool. I'm going to check that out.
And to plug?
I'm still writing a good bit at the MHC Choice website, covering the shows that they have on their streaming service. And I haven't had anything for a few weeks, but I'm about to have a ton of stuff. It's a variety of things, like a couple of German shows. There's a Swedish crazy thing that I have to watch. It's like about some like serial killer or something. I haven't started yet. There's a lot coming up there. So I'm on Twitter at @LoHuff. If you want to give me a follow, I'll always post it there.
Sarah D. Bunting.
Speaking of the 70s and crazy outfits, I watched the Studio 54 documentary on A&E that aired earlier this week. I'm sure it's on demand. It is good. It is completely predictable in the build, from the soundtrack selections to the photo assets. And my issue with this documentary is that the photo assets are amazing. Like, literally every person in every photo is crazy famous and needs no captioning or identifying. And yet they would sort of flash through it at this like coked up, poppered up pace, which I got it, but just linger on this photo of Truman Capote in his bathrobe taking a nap on a banquet at Studio 54. Like, that's a good photo. There are also photos of people just with their bits hanging out, which, fine, sure, skim over those if you like. I understand it's basic cable, but it's Truman Capote and he's passed out in a disco. Come on. But with that said, the music selections are predictable, but they're still good. The Talking Heads are really good. Steve Rubell, of course, is no longer with us, but Ian Schrager, his partner, now a hotelier, almost never participates in these things, and he does a ton of commentary on it. Bob Colicello is on it. Norma Kamali is on it. The other thing about it, which is not, this is not a clock on it, it's just striking. And the subtext that becomes text at the end is that so many of the other people that you see in the pictures or who could comment on what it was like during this very short, white hot period of Studio 54's rise and dominance of the scene, is that many of these people have died and died years ago of HIV, complications of AIDS, drug issues, etc. And the thing that made Studio 54 so great, which was that it was this wonderful melting pot and cross-section of class and race and gender identity, or, you know, failure to declare identity. And that was also okay. And there's like a horse on the dance floor and all that great stuff. These were populations that were remarginalized and demolished by HIV, which is not something the documentary really gets into, but in, you know, it doesn't have to. There are absences that you still feel in it. And for that, it's quite striking. And it's also, you know, it's fun to look at, and I guess fun to remember that all these people who are like, I miss the gritty New York. Fuck you do. Come on. Nobody, you do not miss that. Trust me. Anyway, it is very good. It's not great, but it's very good. And I'll try to find a link to it. I bet it's on the A&E website, so I'll put that in the show notes. But I'm glad I watched it. It was a fun 2 hours. And for my plug, speaking of music, Mark and Sarah Talk About Songs is featuring special guest Joe Reed. For the next couple of weeks, we'll be discussing the Cranberries, and before the Oscars, we will be having a Star Is Born off between the two Oscar-nominated songs from the most recent Stars Are Borns, however you pluralize that. Anyway, yep, that is coming up on Mark and Sarah Talk About Songs. That's wherever fine podcasts are downloaded, and also ours.
Big Mouth, My Furry Valentine, a Big Mouth special, debuted on Netflix this week. It was funny. It was in keeping with the rest of the Big Mouth we have grown to love. I have two things I want to talk about. One, the fucking ladybug gets me every time. I forget this character exists, and then it pops up on the screen, says its stupid, sweary thing, and then leaves, and I laugh my ass off. It somehow immediately leaves my brain, and then the next time it pops up, I'm like, yeah, ladybug's back, yay! Every time. I don't know how they do that, what they're doing with the neurons to make that happen, but it works every time. Yep. And the other thing, and this is Tara's observation, and I totally co-sign it, is sometime between the start of this series and now, either the show creators or Netflix or just happenstance of technology, Rick, the decaying hormone monsters, now has subtitles for all his like grumbly, gravelly, and it kind of ruins it. Like, it was much better when you can only tell like about 65% of what he was talking about on first listen. Yeah. And having the subtitles just kind of like, you know, it's like just a bad decision. I don't know if that was a creative or technologic issue, but Tara, what did you think?
Yeah, it's really funny. It's I think setting up some stuff for season three, particularly with Andrew, who has a bigger role in this than I think he ever has before. That's the gay character played by Andrew Rannells, most recently of Big Black Monday, which we talked about a couple of weeks ago. And a couple of good musical numbers, but they do this framing device, this like When Harry Met Sally kind of thing, but it's with the kids and their individual hormone monsters, like telling their origin stories of their relationships. It's very funny. Yeah, it's great. And I think we talked at some point, possibly as recently as our Christmas episode, about how great it would be for Netflix to do more holiday or, you know, one-off specials like this. And this is such a smart way to keep interest in the show between seasons, particularly for an animated show, which obviously takes a lot more work and time in between seasons to just produce. So something like this coming up in between seasons is very clever. Obviously, they did the same thing with Bandersnatch and with the mini season of Nailed It, the holiday special, and so forth. So, yeah. Netflix should do more of these. I will probably watch them for every show that they do. And if you get through this and you haven't watched it yet, you should check out the Michael Bolton's Big Sexy Valentine. I think that's what it's called, which is produced by the Lonely Island guys and is also very silly and funny. It's like a variety show for Valentine's Day, and tis the season for the next couple of days. So if you haven't watched it yet, it's a couple of years old, but it's also very funny and dumb.
For my plug, I just want to say that I put up that Patreon form I was talking about at the beginning of this show, and we're 45 minutes into it and we already have 15 responses. So
wow,
people are into it.
Dang. Okay,
thanks guys.
patreon.com/extra hot great.
Thank you very much.
We have an extra credit submission from Caroline, our French friend. Although it is not a traditional offering, as she writes, my mini topic is a little different. I am wondering if TV fans like you are also fans of the podcast itself. Each of you will have to answer a question about a topic mentioned often on Extra Hot Great. And since I'm running it, I will just throw the question that she provided for me open to the group. What aging TV actor who has never played a vampire before has the perfect last name to play the most famous Transylvania creature of the night?
Scott Bakula.
That's correct.
God, Bakula. From Enterprise.
We begin with Caroline's question to Sarah, which is, what television series prompted this description from me? So Eva's two-day pregnancy is now to term because she ate a bunch of handmaidens who volunteered to have their life force sucked out or whatever the fuck. I'll just say for the record, when I read this, I did not remember what show she was talking about. So good luck.
Can you read that once more, please?
Yeah. Apparently, what television series prompted this description from Tara, a.k.a. me? So Eva's two-day pregnancy is now to term because she ate a bunch of handmaidens who volunteered to have their life force sucked out or whatever the fuck. Sarah, what show prompted me to say that?
I have to feel like we are all Domer.
Ding, 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 ding.
Oh, yay! My God. Wow. Oh, my God. I'm so sad I didn't know that was coming because I have no idea where our Domer clip is anymore.
Oh. Well, you can add it in post. Very good. I did not remember that at all. That was from the weird end of, I mean, weird is redundant, but of season three of Under the Dome.
What you just said
there
is one of the most insanely idiotic things I have ever heard. At no point in your rambling, incoherent response were you even close to anything that could be considered a rational thought. Everyone in this room is now dumber for having
Domer.
Listened to it. I award you no points, and may God have mercy on your soul.
I hadn't heard it in so long.
Yeah, thank God. All right, this question is for our guest, Allison.
Oh, God.
What short-lived 2013 sci-fi television series from Fox is still mourned by Dave and only Dave?
Oh, shoot. Aliens? I don't remember. No,
you almost had it. You almost had it.
Did I?
Almost.
Almost.
Human.
Almost, oh, right. Human.
Heard of it.
Heard yep. of it.
All right, this question is for Dave.
Yes.
She asked if you can recall the exact wording of the long-winded insult on True Detective Season 2 that gave you so much delight. I guarantee you won't, but good luck.
Oh, boy.
I think we played it again recently.
We have.
Yeah, I think we did, too.
I will... If you ever something that person, my son again, I will butt fuck your mother's corpse and do something, leave it on the lawn or something like that. Listen to how close I got.
Wow, you're
you ever
so
bully
close.
Or hurt anybody again? I'll come back and butt fuck your father with your mom's headless corpse on this goddamn lawn.
You did it. You had all the elements. Just weren't in the right
Fuck
order.
You, Cole.
All right. So that's this week's extra credit.
Oh, that was
Caroline.
Great. That was fun.
Well played, Caroline.
Hi, Extra Hot Great. I'm Joe, and I am presenting Charmed Season 2, Episode 2, Morality Bites into the Canon. As we prepare for the CW remake that promises to honour the original while being... hopefully better, I thought it was time to look at what many fans consider to be the original Charmed's crowning achievement. During Season 2 in 1999, Charmed was still trying to be seen as different to Buffy, which started airing a year before. Aaron Spelling commissioned the show from Constance Sam Burge, who created it, to capitalise on the supernatural craze. However, she never intended it to be that similar to Buffy. Charmed was never going to get the same critical acclaim, for good reason, but while Buffy was about growing up, friends and relationships, Charmed was about family. Charmed can be summed up as a lightweight balance of supernatural procedural and family drama comedy that stole liberally from late 90s, early noughties pop culture. Seriously, they based the design of the demon side of Cole, one of Phoebe's long-lasting love interests, on a character from The Phantom Menace. Great choice for an inspiration there, Charmed. But the reason why I love this episode, and why I think it works, is because it felt like the writers were actually trying. The episode begins as Piper, Prue and Phoebe are complaining about a rude neighbour who keeps leaving his dog's quote-unquote duty at least 20 feet in front of their house. Here's the first clip.
What did you buy?
Duty. We weren't out of that.
No, I stepped in it. Again, that man has turned our front walk into a puppy minefield.
I cannot believe that guy still lets his dog do his business right in front of our house.
Well, we've left notes and gotten nowhere.
Yeah, well, I've had it. The next time I catch him in the act, I'm gonna give him a piece of my mind.
It should be noted that while the Charmed Ones have magical powers, their peripheral vision could use some work. Seriously, guys, the poo is so far away from their front door. It doesn't take that much effort to walk around it. Phoebe has the idea to teach the bad dog owner a lesson. Piper freezes him using her powers. Prue uses her telekinesis to fling the dog's duty onto the guy's shoe. Happy with their work, Phoebe starts channel surfing. As she clicks onto a news report about a baseball star, she gets a premonition. She sees herself, 10 years in the future, being burned at the stake as punishment for killing him. It's implied throughout the episode the baseball star raped her friend. And so, as is what they do, the Charmed Ones decide to go into the future to stop Phoebe being killed. The joy of any episode that takes its characters into the future is how exactly the writers imagine what the future will look like. 2009, according to Charmed writers, involved voice control televisions, a real world season on the moon, and Sharon Doherty wearing the most heinous long blonde wig that you have ever seen. The Charmed Ones are inside their 2009 selves. Piper is a divorced single mum, and Prue, the owner of an auction house, attempts to get through a scene wearing that travesty. This means Phoebe is about to get burned at the stake. We learn from exposition newscaster man the Charmed Ones have arrived 8 hours before the execution. And who's ordering Phoebe's death? Surprise, it's the evil duty dog owner. Leo, the sister's guardian angel and what passed for a C-grade approachable love interest hunk in the 90s, is now Piper's ex. With the magic of a kiss, apparently, he believes they are the sisters from 10 years before. Prue and Piper work on freeing their sister and not doing what I'd be doing, which is checking lottery numbers from the past decade. Leo orbs into Phoebe's prison cell and informs her why she needs to die.
You know, I wish you remember what you've done. Make this so much easier. Your future self used witchcraft for vengeance, Phoebe. Pratt is using that as a platform.
Why does everyone think that I killed someone? I wouldn't. I mean, I couldn't. What did I do? Premonition the man to death? My power is passive.
Not in the future. It's grown. It's changed, as have you. Which means, unfortunately, you have to suffer the consequences.
Prue and Piper break into the prison. Phoebe walks handcuffed to her death. And Mr. Duty Man, who is living his best Handmaid's Tale life, says this will send a message to the world. People who disobey the laws of nature will be stopped. This will be the day the witch burned. Piper and Prue arrive in the nick of time, and the scene is frozen. As Prue and Piper go to free Phoebe, she stops them.
We are not leaving here without you. Prue, we were sent here for a reason. Maybe not to stop this, like what we thought. But maybe to understand why this has to happen. Why you have to let this happen. I don't want to die. But I don't want you to die because of me.
This scene for me is the reason why this episode is canon worthy. Phoebe realizes she has to die to pay for murdering the baseball player, even if she can't remember it. And she will not allow Piper and Prue to become killers as well. Their job is to protect the innocent and not to punish the guilty. The acting is some of Alyssa Milano's finest work on the series. Whatever dumb stuff the scriptwriters threw at them, and the scriptwriters threw a lot of dumb stuff, the actresses worked with it as best they could. When the writing was as good as the acting, the series was actually pretty good. Phoebe steps back onto the stake and the flames start burning. Obviously, as we've got many more seasons to go, the sisters return to present day 1999. They have figured out Phoebe got the premonition of the future not to stop it, but to understand why Phoebe was sent to the stake. It is in the present that they can affect change. They then see Duty Man let his dog poo on the street, and when they go to fight back, Phoebe stops them. This is the moment they first used magic for revenge, and because of that, it might have led to Duty Man's campaign for the murder of witches. The episode ends as the sisters realise they need to start making good choices. Well, as long as that lasts. While the lesson is simplistic, selfish actions have consequences, this episode really works. While Charmed might not have ever become as good as Buffy was, it was still great popcorn television, and it has its place in pop culture. Morality Bites is everything the series became known for. A little magic, some relationship and family drama, and too many heinous wigs to speak of. That's why I'm asking you to induct this episode into the canon. Thanks for listening.
Thank you, Joe. Now, which one of you fine ladies / witches would like to go first?
Well, Allison picked it from the list, so I think she should go first.
Okay, I chose this because Charmed is one of those shows that when I was working from home all the time, it's on like 24 hours a day somehow. And so I would have it on occasionally. And so I picked up, I was never a regular watcher of the show, but I would pick up sort of, you know, the through lines and the details of it. It is just as he very perfectly described. I mean, it is not a good show. But when I watch this episode, I have to say I agree with so much of what he said. I mean, I watched it just the other day and I thought, man, Alyssa Milano is really killing this. And Shannen Doherty as well. Like, this show was unworthy of, you know, their from childhood talents as far as the writing went. But when they sort of clicked things together, it went well. Now, I mean, the bad things about it were, of course, on full display, like the clothing in the show, the wardrobe of it is the thing that always bothered me the worst about it. Like, why are you wearing like a halter top to court, you know?
Like, I know. Why are you wearing a strapless leather dress to break into a prison?
Right.
Sneakers, like, jeans, look into it.
Yeah, there's just put a hoodie on, somebody. I mean, really, the 90s were just like so terrible, and it's so perfectly crystallized in this show. But they, I actually enjoyed the episode because some of the cheesier factors were not in play. There's a minimal use of Leo, who was insufferable and 80 years old. I mean, I don't know how, you know, why this guy was the love interest ever. Anyway, I found it to be rather charming. And, I thought, as far as an episode of this show goes, this is probably as good as it got.
Sarah.
Yeah, I think that's about right. This was perfectly enjoyable, in equal measure for the things that were good about it, which, as mentioned, were the acting, some little side references to, like, the fact that it's a baseball player. I think this was during, like, peak Alyssa Milano dating a couple of the Dodgers era. So what? That's sort of funny that she's, like, tipped into that premonition. I think my notes read something like, perhaps this is supposed to trigger antibiotics. Like, is this a revenge thing that she suggested to the writer? I don't know. And it's like, she's a wonderful host on Project Runway All-Stars. And I always liked Holly Marie Combs too, but her, like, her accent, like, she's very Southern in this episode. And this episode is enjoyable for the predictable elements that make this show, like, compellingly just dowdy. The effects are hilarious.
Oh my God.
Not even going to call them special. They're not. They're barely effects. Leo is wearing really a lot of makeup, usually devoted to people who are in caskets, and is a log. There wasn't any of what our esteemed colleague Demian used to call crapton, like the fake Latin that they used, but it was a dumb, like, that's not even a rhyme. Okay. Bad extensions, bad wig, bad, like, Shando still was not quite able to work with her giant mouthful of caps.
Yep.
And couldn't control it. And yet, this was very heartfelt and also completely unashamed of just resetting everything and not worrying about the prime directive. And for that reason, I don't know. And their concept of 2009, which was like, some things are in space, most shit's the same. Okay. Right. Like, I got a perm, everything else is cool. All right. Alexa, turn the TV up. I enjoyed this very much. I think the thing that I enjoyed most, however, about this entire experience is hearing the phrase duty man in that accent. Thank you so much. That was delightful.
All right, I'll go next. This is the first episode of Charmed I watched in my life. And it's funny to set it in time. This was airing contemporaneously with season 10 of Beverly Hills 90210, which Sarah and I are covering over on Again with this, and with the first season of Roswell, which Dave and I rewatched the original pilot when we talked about the reboot with Dan Rogge a few weeks ago. Like, how badly all of this has aged is kind of hilarious, considering that I also watch Friends all the time, like, talking about a show that's on all the time, Friends. And, like, those early seasons are from the early 90s, and it somehow has aged so much better in most respects than, like, any of these dramas, which is weird. But this is not a Charmed versus Friends face off.
Can I butt in just for one second to illustrate your point on the 90s-ness and how this has aged?
Sure.
This is the very opening of the episode to which we have B-roll of the Charmed House. What?
Yeah.
That's some Seventh Heaven shit right there.
Yes, I was about
absolutely.
To say. The thing about it is, like, even when it was on, it looked, like, even in 1999, it looked bad. Like, I think it was just,
even Seventh Heaven looked more expensive. Yeah. It just looked,
So, anyway, all of that aside, I appreciate Joe's points about saying that it seems like it's trying, although that doesn't speak maybe that well of the rest of the series. And yeah, as we as Allison and Sarah have already said, what 2009 as envisioned by the Charmed writers is kind of hilarious. I love when Piper wakes up and she's just got this like pointless strap across her shirt for no reason. Yep, she kind of fusses with it like, what?
I just realized there was no payoff to that.
Yeah.
Damn it.
No, I mean, what payoff could there be? It's like it's a dumb design feature. Like, some design features are dumb. Certainly that was true of all the clunky heels that we saw in 1999.
Oh, yeah.
And Alyssa Milano is great, for sure. But I appreciate that the ultimate thesis of the episode, or the moral in the fairy tale sense that they are being taught, is don't kill people, or don't use your magic for any kind of self-interested purpose. Like, fine, I guess it's important when you have a magic show that you need to occasionally like remind your viewers what the rules are in this universe and like what is acceptable and what is not. Is it that bad that, for what's her name? Phoebe? Is that her name? Alyssa Milano. Yes. For her to have killed the man who raped her friend, like, is that really so bad that she would decide she should be killed in retribution? Like, this is getting into like a fractal of revenge that's kind of nonsense. And like, yes, she killed someone, but it's just a man. I mean, I'm kidding, but not really.
I fully think agree. That was her motivation for... I thought that she realized that she had to die in this timeline in order to send them back to the original timeline. I didn't think she was actually that sorry. She was just like, this has to happen. Let's hope I'm right.
Right. Maybe.
I don't know.
I guess.
Let's not think too deeply on Charmed.
No, indeed. But the other thing is like, then she sees clearly the date of her execution. Like, do they ever explain why? And then they decide to go back 2 weeks before because they figure that'll be enough time to figure out what all this is about. And then it turns out they've sent themselves back to the day of the execution. Like, is that just Leo nonsense, or is it ever explained?
I don't think it was.
I think
was.
It's probably Leo nonsense.
Yeah, it was, but they like, don't. Oh, say. It's in 8 hours. Like they never really explain that.
Mm-mm. I mean, for dramatic purposes, I guess, for the ticking clock and such with stakes and stuff. I get it, and I'm trying to be generous based on, like, this is a show from almost 20 years ago at this point. Like, TV was very different then. Would I have thought this was a very special episode? Not in the, cliche sense, but, like, would I have thought this was an exceptional hour of Charmed at that time? It's hard to say. Dave.
Oh, okay. You guys are all smoking crack. This was, like, enjoyable and how terrible it was.
Yeah.
And that's not what we give out to canon ribbons for. This was the 90th thing I've ever seen, possibly, contained in 45 minutes. It was kind of amazing, from the fashion to the Saturday afternoon syndicated level special effects to just everything. It was kind of amazing. And I did enjoy the ride, but there is no way in hell I would ever put this in like important TV. Like, we got some Buffy episodes in the canon, and I think that kind of hit like a 60% success rate on canon submissions. And like, this is a full rung below Buffy, and this episode is silly. It's silly.
I have to say, Dave, like, it was on for 10 years and this is the best episode. If you watched any other episode,
this apparently is it. This is the one, guys.
Yeah,
and I'm like, really?
Yeah, this is it.
So I tried to relate to it. This is my process. I was like, okay, so what is your Charmed? Like, if you were 10, 15 years younger and Charmed was your like 13 to 19 year old kind of jam at that time, what would it be? Or maybe even younger. I don't know how this show skewed. I don't know how Joe is. But for me, that's like me submitting an episode of the A-Team for the canon. Certainly something I enjoyed. I certainly know what episodes are better than the others. I certainly know when they got off their keister and decided to do like a little story arc instead of having absolutely everything self-contained in one episode and reset. But that doesn't mean the best of the A-Team is anywhere close to a canon entry. I remember one time we did an episode and I submitted some stupid G.I. Joe episode as part of like a force ending. It was also kind of like a canon thing. And I remember Sarah at the end of it going, wait a sec, was that a canon submission? And I'm like, yeah, sure. And she's like, come on. And I kind of feel like that's what this one. It's like, I get it. It's nostalgia and it's the best of a show that you enjoyed, but it's not good. It's enjoyable, it's not good. And I think it's not important TV in that sort of put a stake down for it. Like there's an episode of Beverly Hills 90210 in the canon because that is like a tentpole teen drama that was a cultural force, did things that people emulated for years. And yes, it was stupid. And no, it is no Breaking Bad episode, but it's still got a legacy.
Well, and you know who Dead Scott is, and that's that episode.
Right. Yeah. I'm not seeing that with this episode of Charmed, and I doubt I'm going to see it with other episodes of Charmed. It was fun, but not great. I really enjoyed the one futuristic looking thing they managed to add, which I think might have been like next door they're shooting iRobot or something like that, and they borrowed a
car, a hover car,
to zoom across their mansion.
I didn't even see that.
And also it's a shame that the theme song had to be replaced at this point in time for Netflix. Oh, yeah. I know they changed it. Their rights to How Soon Is Now by the Smiths had expired. But fear not, as a gift, as a consolation prize to all the Charmed fans out there, because I will not vote this into the canon, I have combined the I have combined the new theme to Charmed with new copyright safe lyrics to How Soon Is Now, and I'll play it at the end of the show for you. You're welcome. All right. With that, let's put this to a vote. Allison Lohuff, what do you say about Charmed Season 2, Episode 2, Morality Bites? Canon worthy?
All right, Dave. You know, you persuaded me, because if this was a canon of just Charmed, this would be the only show that got into the canon.
Yeah.
Based on your parameters for the canon, I'm going to vote no.
I thought that word is going to be rambling, but also acceptable. Sarah D. Bunting.
I forgot to mention that Prue's future flunky predicted an even further future by having a weird Elizabeth Holmes of Theranos voice.
Oh, yeah.
Which I enjoyed. I enjoyed this. I think best of the genre is okay, but I too was convinced by Dave's somewhat crackpotty but continued kernel of truth rant.
Passionate.
Fair.
This was an excellent presentation and a very fun 44 minutes, but I too will be voting no.
Tar area.
Yeah, I was never really gonna vote yes, but I loved Joe's presentation so much. I love how snarky he was, and so,
and his accent.
Yes, of course, and how clear eyed he was,
duty man,
about what he was submitting. Like he knows it's trash, but he had to take a shot, and thank God he did.
It was
fun to watch. Joe, please submit again. But yeah, it's a no for me.
I think there's a side project for like Trash Cannon or something like that. You know, like
Trash
it's
can.
Not important TV and it doesn't have a legacy, but you know, it's there. It's there for you in times of need. And I think this is one of those episodes.
Trash Cannon.
So with that, unfortunately, we have to say Charmed Season 2, Episode 2, Morality Bites. You are hereby not inducted to the Extra Hot Great Canon.
Americans love a winner.
Yup.
And will not tolerate a loser.
Nope.
It's time for Winner and Loser of the Week. Who has our winner?
Me. As a preamble to our winner, I'll just mention that the winner, which we're about to hear, softens the blow of learning that Counterpart is dead at Stars.
Oh,
Stars, in a real dick move, announced this, that it was not picking up a season 3 before the season 2 finale has even aired. Like, all right, guys, you could have waited a week. Jesus.
Jeez.
Apparently, Meteor Rights Capital, which is the production company that makes the show, is shopping it around to other outlets. But I bet 15 people watch this show and three of them are on this podcast. So,
yeah.
I don't see it getting picked up anywhere else. It's going to spend the kind of money that I'm sure it costs to shoot in Berlin and have the special effects that actually work. And it really sucks because one of the best episodes of the whole run of the show was this season where we saw the origins of how the path was split. So that sucks. But When God closes a door, he opens a window, by which I mean the other two has been picked up for season two already at Comedy Central. Yay! We talked about this show 2 weeks ago with Joe Reed, not Joe the Charmed Submitter. And I love it so much. I'm already kind of mad at myself that we watched all 10 episodes like in a day because it's so good and so funny. And I'm so glad that they're getting me more. So yay for the other two.
Sarah, who is our loser?
NBC. As is so often the case. And there were actually like a whole bunch of NBC adjacent options for this.
Weren't there ever.
I've got to stand by my birthday mate, Bob Costas, who was fired by NBC from the Super Bowl for telling the truth about concussions some more. Boo.
Oh, that was it. All right, guys. Speaking about boo, do you know what time it is? It's game time.
Space time?
It's boo time?
Game time. For that transition, which was terrible, I apologize. All right, guys, welcome back to Game Time. Season scores are one for everybody. We're all tied up. This is the fourth game time. Everybody's got one so far. Who will win today? Let's find out. We are going to play location, location, location. From Rebecca, who earns herself an extra credit, topic of her choosing. She writes, as every good real estate agent knows, location is everything. That goes for TV shows, too. How many times have we heard, for example, that New York is the fifth character on Sex and the City? So, can you guess the state a show was set in from the description of that show? I am going to give you the show's IMDb description. With the character and location names redacted. You'll hear this. I need you to guess the show and the state that it is in for 2 points. Need a clue? I will give you the show title and then you tell me the state it is set in for 1 point. You only get one guess, so choose whether you want that hint up top or not. Some caveats. Not every of the 50 states is included in an answer. A few states do appear more than once, and we have at least one answer that will be the District of Columbia. Remember, we're looking for the show's setting, not the filming location. So Dawson's Creek would be Massachusetts, not North Carolina. Lastly, these are all scripted shows, no reality programs. All right, Tara, can we please get the steel meal sitch?
Yes, Sarah and I each have two steel meals. Guests have zero.
All right, let's throw it to Picky to see who is going first.
We will start with Sarah.
All right, our order today, Sarah, Tara, Allison. Are we ready to play location, location, location?
Yes.
Yes, yes, yes.
Here we go. Round one. These are recent-ish TV shows. All right? For Sarah. The absurd politics of Anne... town's public officials as they pursue sundry projects to make their city a better place. What's the show? What's the state? Ask for a clue. I'll give you the show. You tell me the state.
I'm pretty sure this is a Parks and Recreation of Indiana.
You are correct. And that is worth 2 points. Tara.
Textbook. Yeah.
Start you off with something redacted.
Okay.
Returns home to in order to find his father's killer. The governor offers him the chance to run his own task force. What's the show? What's the state?
And his father's killer. Show.
That show is, and I don't know if you're going to be able to get it from the show, Hawaii 5-0.
Oh.
What's that state?
Oh, Hawaii.
That's good for 1 point.
5-0.
Allison.
Yep.
The original elite team of police forensic evidence investigation experts work their cases in...
Is it CSI New York?
You got 1 point there for CSI, but it's Nevada because that takes place in Las Vegas.
Oh, right, in Vegas. How stupid.
All right. So Sarah is leading with her 2 points so far. Let's see if she can do it again. A young woman with a troubled past is drawn to a small town inn where fairy tales are to be believed.
Oh, Jesus.
The show?
It's Once Upon a Time.
The state?
I can't believe I remember this.
Where the fuck? Let's go with Maine.
Dang!
All right.
Hey, Adam Grossworth, your spirit was with me.
That's how you play.
All right, Tara. A writer yes. tries to juggle his career, his relationships with his daughter and his ex-girlfriend, as well as his appetite for beautiful women.
I believe this is Californication in the set of Californica. Just kidding, California.
Correct. All right, Allison. Former senator finds that being vice president of the United States is nothing like she hoped and everything that everyone warned her about.
A scandal in D.C.? No? I'm sorry.
Beep.
Does she get a point for D.C. or no?
Did she say D.C.?
She said D.C. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Then yes, I will give you D.C.
Of course it's Beep. Point. Oh, I'm so stupid. Go ahead.
Sarah D. Bunting? Yeah. A Secret Service agent goes to in search of two federal agents who have gone missing in town. He soon learns that he may never get out of... alive.
Show
is Wayward Pines.
Where the fuck that is?
Yeah.
Right half of the world. That is Idaho. Idaho.
Oh.
Yeah. I was thinking Michigan.
Talk to me like that.
Tara Ariano, starting off with something redacted.
Okay.
Drug scenes seen through the eyes of drug dealers and law enforcement.
Oh, this is probably The Wire in Maryland.
You are probably correct. Nice. All right, back to Allison. Telepathic waitress encounters a strange new supernatural world when she meets the mysterious a southern gentleman and vampire.
The place is Louisiana. The name is True Blood. Is that right?
You are correct. Hey. 2 points.
Hey, nicely done.
Back
Could
to
not think of the name roll.
Buncey. An politician plays both sides of the law, conspiring with gangsters during the Prohibition era. What's that show? What state is it in?
I believe this is a Boardwalk Empire in the Garden State, New Jersey.
You are correct. Buncey on a tear. 2 points. Tara.
Yeah.
A dramedy centering around the relationship between a 30-something single mother and her teen daughter living in...
This is Gilmore Girls of Connecticut.
Correct. 2 points. Allison. A young... struggles to find his place in the world as he learns to harness his alien powers for good and deals with the typical troubles of teenage life in...
Oh, God. Alien powers.
Alien powers.
Oh,
say it right.
Is this alien powers?
Thank you. 2 day points.
Is this is a... It's the show about Superman. Am I right? Wait, don't tell me.
Good news, I'm not going to.
Yeah, we won't.
Nobody not tell me.
While you think of it, let me read this clue for you again.
Okay.
A young struggles to find his place in the world as he learns to harness his alien powers for good and deals with the typical troubles of teenage life in... Can you work backwards?
You know
the state.
If I work backwards...
You know the show.
I can't. Go ahead. I don't know.
All right. You want the show?
Yeah.
Smallville. What's the state? Where is Smallville located? Do you know your Superman lore?
I don't. That's the problem. You know.
Take a guess. 1 out of 50 chance. It's probably not Hawaii. I'm going to give you that.
New Mexico?
That is Kansas. Kansas.
Okay. I sort of knew that. I could not,
I would not have
think
guessed
of any
that,
of it.
Babs.
Sarah D. Bunting.
I kind of knew it.
A mockumentary on a group of typical office workers where the workday consists of ego clashes, inappropriate behavior, and tedium.
This is The Office in Pennsylvania.
You are correct. Look at Carmen Sandiego go. Dang. All right. Tara.
I'm winning.
Yes.
A suspended lawyer is forced to enroll in a community college with an eclectic staff and student body.
Oh, God damn it. Okay. It's community. And I feel like the state was always in question, but for some reason I'm thinking Colorado?
Oh!
God.
Nice. All right, Allison, this is our last question before we break for the score.
Okay.
Drama about the pioneers of the science of human sexuality, whose research touched off the sexual revolution. What's that show? What's that state?
The Kinsey Report?
Steel Mail?
Oh. Wait, you got to give her a name. Got to give her a second to answer the state.
The state?
Okay. Sorry.
New York? I don't know.
All right, Tara, your chance. Steal them both.
Okay, this is Masters of Sex, and they were in Missouri.
You are
but
correct.
They were writing the Kinsey Report. You guys,
that's
come on.
That's good for a 2-point steal. Let's hear the scores, please, Tara.
Okay, Allison has 4 points. Sarah D. Bunting has 8 points. I have 11.
All right, David T. Cole puts on his glasses, activates his iPhone light because we are in... The Equalizer Challenge Zone from Mr. Adam Grossworth. Who is in last place, please?
Allison.
Nate. Allison. I'm holding in my hand a Trivial Pursuit TV question card from the mid-90s. I'm going to ask you all 6 questions. You get 3 of them right. You get 4 delicious points. Are you ready?
Oh, my. Yes.
Good luck. Good luck.
Here we go.
Thank you.
Classics. Classics. What cigarette company forced Rod Serling to axe the word lucky from a script? Cigarette company.
Forced them to axe the word lucky?
Yep.
Lucky Strikes?
Hey. Sitcoms. What sitcom alien appeared on some 250 items of merchandise after his debut in the 1987-88 season?
Alf.
Yeah!
What miniseries was War and Remembrance the sequel to?
North and South?
The Winds of War. The Winds of War.
I actually knew that.
Oh, all right, still got 3 questions. You only need 1 of them.
Okay.
Who did Newsweek dub toe-tapping little pitch persons for the raisin industry?
Oh, no. The hated California raisins?
The hated California raisins is correct. And you just got 4 points.
She did it!
Ooh.
Nicely done. All right, so quickly update on the scores.
Well, this just got interesting. Now, Sarah and Allison are tied with 8 points each. I have 11.
All right. So back to the game. Back to
Good
Sarah.
Good job, Allison.
We're still in recent-ish TV shows.
All right.
The trials and tribulations of a criminal lawyer in the time leading up to establishing his strip mall law office in...
Better Call Saul, and that's in New Mexico.
You are correct. Tara Ariano, a sketch comedy series that parodies life in...
Show?
Portlandia.
Oh. that's Portlandia of Oregon?
Yes, good for 1 point. Allison.
Yep.
I like that you got this one. Old school U.S. Marshal is reassigned from Miami to his childhood home in the poor, rural, coal mining towns in eastern...
Oh, this is Justified in West Virginia. Oh, no, not West Virginia.
Eastern West Virginia is not the answer. Eastern Kentucky.
Kentucky, yeah, shit.
But you got the
Sorry.
1 point.
Of course it is. Damn.
Sarah Bunting. In a wacky town, a dysfunctional family strives to cope with everyday life as they are thrown from one crazy scenario to another. Now, this is the IMDb description, leaving out what I believe is a very crucial piece of business.
I feel like the information is that it's animated, so let's guess King of the Hill, and that's in Texas.
I like that guess, though.
Yeah, that was a good guess. In a wacky Rhode Island town, that is Family Guy.
Oh. It was animated, though. Those fuckers.
Yes.
A group of ambitious misfits try to escape the harsh realities of high school by joining a glee club where they find strength, acceptance, and ultimately their voice while working to pursue dreams of their own.
Okay, well, that's Glee. They were in Ohio?
Oh, nice pull.
Oof. Nicely done. Allison Lohuff.
Yes.
This semi-autobiographical dark comedy starring follows her as she returns to her hometown after the sudden death of her mother. This
I feel like I know what this is, but show.
The show is one, get this, Mississippi. What's the state?
Is it set in Mississippi, though? Yeah, Mississippi.
Correct. Didn't overthink it. Well done.
I was going to say, please don't outsmart yourself.
Sarah D. Bunting, short clue for you. A look at the lives of employees at a big box store. IMDb, concise and to the point to a fault. A look at lives of employees at a big box store.
It's Superstore. Which is set
in the great state of...
How about Illinois? Why not?
Missouri.
Missouri.
Tara Ariano.
I'll show you.
Yes.
An irreverent look at what goes on behind the scenes in... Is... Police department. So in some cities, police department.
I mean, that could be literally anything.
It could be literally anything. It is irreverent.
I'm going to just take a stab that it's Brooklyn Nine-Nine of New York.
IMDb, gotcha. Should have asked for the clue. The clue was Reno 911.
Oh.
State is, of course... Renopolis. Allison Lohuff.
Yes.
A mob boss deals with personal and professional issues in his home and business life, which affects his mental health and leads him to seek professional psychiatric counseling.
Okay.
The Sopranos, the Dirty Jurors.
You are correct for 2 points.
Oh, I didn't realize people who weren't from there were allowed to say that. Good to know.
I'm married to someone.
Yeah, she married
that's true.
Into it.
She married into the slight. Well done. Yep. Sarah D. Bunting, the trials and tribulations of small town football players, their friends, family, and coaching staff.
Oh, Lord. Well, I hope this is Friday Night Lights in the great state of Texas.
You are correct for 2 points. Tara.
Yes.
Follows two women throughout their daily lives in making the smallest and most mundane events hysterical and disturbing to watch all at the same time.
Disturbing? God.
Hysterical and disturbing, according to IMDb.
Okay, show.
Broad City.
Oh,
okay. New York.
Good for two.
I was thinking Playing House, so I was in the zone.
A drama centered on the personal and professional lives of five surgical interns and their supervisors.
Well, this also could be a few things, but Grey's Anatomy.
I think the key there is the number of surgical interns there.
I see, in the state of Washington.
You are correct for 2 points.
Oh,
well done.
Nice.
All right, Sarah D. Bunting, a show set in the late 1800s revolving around the characters of... A town of deep corruption and crime.
Oh, Deadwood, which is in South Dakota.
Yes, 2 points. Pulled it.
Nice.
Damn it.
Well, you got each other's like best shows.
Yeah, so we got each other's HBO joint.
And it worked out. It worked out.
Yeah, it did.
All right, Tara, follows the lives and tragedies of rising and fading country music stars in...
This is Nashville in Tennessee.
Yeah, pretty easy one.
New font.
Picky playing favorites now.
Allison, back to you. A polygamist and his relationship with his three wives. Guess the state.
Big love in Utah.
Yes.
The state is Hong Kong. Too soon?
All right, back to Sarah. Everybody's last question of round one. comedy that explores the private lives of unique individuals through a common thread, their weed delivery man.
Aww.
Oh, thanks, Picky. I'm sorry that I yelled at you. That's high maintenance, and it's New York.
You are correct. Tara, your last question in round one. A bipolar CIA operative becomes convinced a prisoner of war has been turned by Al-Qaeda and is planning to carry out a terrorist attack on American soil.
Okay, well, it's Homeland, but it has moved, so it's either D.C. or New York.
Well, keep in mind that description.
Okay, then that's the D.C. area.
This place of Virginia, mostly Virginia.
Oh, all right.
Allison, here we go. Last question of round one.
Okay.
Follows the awkward experiences and racy tribulations of a modern-day African-American woman. This is IMBD's description, not mine or the author's.
Okay. The show follows racy, blah, blah, blah.
The show follows the awkward experiences and racy tribulations of a modern-day African-American woman.
Oh, is this... Okay. Issa Rae. Shit. God, my mind is going blank. Is the city L.A.?
It might be, but that's not what we want.
All right, give me the name of the show.
Well, we want the state is the answer.
Oh, California.
Okay, California, giving you that. Does that help you with the show?
Well, I know what it is. I just can't.
You just can't pull it?
All right. No.
Tara?
It's Insecure.
Insecure.
Yes.
But you still got a point. You still got one.
I love that show. Damn it.
All right, round one, recent-ish shows is done. Scores, please, Tara.
Well, it's very interesting. Sarah and Allison are still tied. Now with 17 points each, I have 18.
Ooh, all right. So that means Allison and Sarah.
Oh, God.
Good luck, us. Good luck, guys.
This is how it works when we have two people. You play together, you split the dividends.
Oh, God.
Starting off with classics.
Tara. Right there.
What second banana did Gary Moore first team up with on radio's Club Matinee?
It's all you, Sarah.
All right, Sarah, I'm serious.
Fair.
If you can answer this, you just win straight out.
Wow.
What second banana did Gary Moore
first team up with on radio's Club Matinee? I thought this was a TV
Club
question,
Matinee.
But whatever.
Well, presumably it's like they started on radio and then moved to TV.
I would hope so. Otherwise, we're going to write a stern letter to, what is it, Horn Abbott? Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you have any thoughts here, Allison?
I really don't. Gary Moore, I'm not even sure who that is.
I would go with Toronto.
Oh, God.
I was going to put you out of misery. That, of course, is Durwood Kirby. Sitcom.
Not a radio star we all know.
Durwood was a real name of somebody?
Durwood just,
blow
me.
It's a good baseball chant. Durwood Kirby.
clap.
Okay, here you go. Sitcoms. What blue-collar show was called the most daring new sitcom of the 1988-89 season by Time Magazine? Giving a hint because it came up before. It's not Elf.
It's got to be Roseanne, yeah?
Yeah, I would agree.
Okay, Roseanne.
Yay!
Dramas. How many kids do Mom and Pop Walton have? 5, 6, or 7?
Shit.
Oh,
okay.
Christ.
John Boy, Elizabeth.
That other one.
The other
freckly one.
The twins.
Hector.
I don't actually know this, so.
I don't either. I'm going to say... I mean, can we split the difference and say 6? Because
I think that's
sure.
What I do. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wilhelm. Sammy. All right. What's the answer you're giving?
6.
6 is incorrect. 7.
Oh,
damn.
What did critic Tom Shales call the game show you can watch without guilt in 1990?
What? Without guilt?
Giant Jeopardy? Snob Tom Shales says this is the game show you can watch without guilt in 1990.
Sarah says Jeopardy.
I think it's Jeopardy.
Yeah, me too.
Nice. Woo.
Well done. You need one of these last two questions. Here is your stars category. The answer will be a celebrity. Who wrote the theme song for the Arsenio Hall show?
I think it's Sheila E.
That sounds right.
Sheila E.
Oh, fuck. I'm
Arsenio
so sorry.
Hall wrote the Arsenio Hall theme.
Oh.
Quintuple threat, Arsenio Hall.
Mm-hmm.
With the theme.
No doubt.
All right, you got to do this. Do or die. Wild card. Mm-hmm. Oh, what ABC show once showcased a Frenchman who devoured a 10-speed bike?
Ripley's Believe It or Not?
That's incredible.
Oh, yeah, shit.
I don't know what was on ABC, though.
I think Ripley's was ABC, but I'm not totally sure.
Me neither.
Decisions. Sounds like it's between Ripley's and That's Incredible. What's your final answer, please, Allison and Sarah?
I think it's Ripley's. Is that okay?
Yeah, it's fine with me. I don't know. Yeah.
That's incredible.
So sorry.
No.
I knew if you made me pick that it would be wrong.
I was totally guessing.
Sorry, man.
Very close, though. All right, back to the game. This is round two, vintage TV round. Here we go. Sarah D. Bunting. A group of friends living in... make their way through life from their school days into adulthood. Says IMDb about this show.
Is it The Wonder Years?
It is not. But now you have a blind guess at the state, I guess, for 1 point. 150 chance. Let's do it.
Vermont.
That was a little show.
Was it Beverly Hills
90210?
Oh, fuck.
Beverly Hills 90210.
Everybody knows that's in New Hampshire.
What a description of that.
California. Yeah,
what?
IMDb's not the greatest, guys. No. Tari Ariano.
Yeah.
Doctor moves back to his hometown of Seattle, where he lives with his father and works in radio.
That is Frasier in Washington.
Correct. Allison Lohuff.
Uh-huh.
I want to explain that first one. That is as in a city resident's name, like I would say Torontonian or something like that.
So, okay.
All right. And new doctor accepts an offer from a stranger doctor to work in his medical practice in... She arrives to find he has died and left half the practice to her in his will.
I was waiting for this one to come up.
Oh, God.
All right. So once again, some sort of city resident name and new doctor. That's the same person. Accepts an offer from a stranger doctor to work at his medical practice in. She arrives to find he has died and left half the practice to her in his will. What's that show? Where does it take place? Tara seems to know.
I obviously should know this, but I don't. I'm going to say Dr.
Sarah
Quinn, Medicine Woman.
You didn't take a stab at it? Dr. Quinn, Medicine Woman. Incorrect. All right. That was Heart of Dixie. Heart of Dixie in Alabama.
Isn't that a shame that I didn't know that? Aren't y'all sad for me? I am. I've never watched
it. It's a cute little show, too.
It's cute.
I like it.
That's what I've heard. Yeah.
Sarah.
Starring Deshaun Hardell.
Suburban Mom. Attempts to balance family life with solving mysteries using her special gift. The dead send her visions of their deaths or other crimes while she sleeps. It's called Sleep Lock.
Show?
The show is Medium. Starring Pamela Ribbon.
Right, starring Pamela Ribbon.
Where does that take place is the question indeed.
I don't know, but let's guess Delaware.
Yay.
We're in
close.
Delaware. Not even close. That is Arizona.
Yeah. To Arizona. That's what I said.
Tara. The misadventures of two single women in the 50s and 60s.
Is this Laverne and Shirley in Wisconsin?
Yes, it is. 2 points. Well done. Allison Lohuff, in this laid-back comedy, is a former pro football player who is retired and returned to his childhood home, the small town of
He's now the coach of the local high school football team, which brings him constant contact with other residents of the town.
Coach in Minnesota?
Mm.
No?
Nope. Anybody?
No.
That is Evening Shade, and that is Arkansas.
Oh, my God. But it could also be Coach.
It sounded very authoritative, and I bought it.
All right. I would have said yes if I didn't have the answer in front of me, Allison.
I know. I know. It's okay.
Sarah D. Bunting. Four previously married women live together in, sharing their various experiences together and enjoying themselves despite hard times.
This better be the Golden Girls in Florida.
It better be. All right, Tara.
It is. Yes.
An especially gifted man with the ability to instantly master any skill escapes from a secret testing facility and then travels the country, taking on different jobs and helping strangers while hiding from his kidnappers.
His kidnappers?
Okay, what? Once again, let's do that again. A specially gifted man with the ability to instantly master any skill escapes from a secret testing facility.
Oh, no.
And travels the country, taking on different jobs and helping strangers while hiding from his kidnappers.
I mean, I have a guess, but I'm not confident. So show.
Show is The Pretender.
Oh. Well, if he's traveling around the country, yeah, how am I supposed to guess where he's from?
Okay. A? That's what
I mean, I'm guessing this is where it starts off. Maybe he doesn't get that far from home.
Okay.
Maybe he's only got, like, you know, chits that get him, like, you know.
All right. It takes place. So he's from a testing facility.
And all testing facilities are usually set in the state of
Virginia.
Dummy is always Delaware.
Sure. Shut up, Dave.
Alison Lohuff, the misadventures of four women and their handyman running a design firm in
designing women in Atlanta, Georgia.
Correct.
Yay! Yes.
All right, Sarah Bunting, I do not want you to overthink this one. The adventures of a based private investigator.
Magnum PI in Hawaii.
Tara Ariano, the lives, loves, and losses of doctors and nurses of General Hospital.
God, yep. Is this?
You know that that one medical drama that features lives, loves, and losses of doctors and nurses of a particular hospital that has General in its name.
Okay, is it General Hospital?
No.
I don't know, could be.
It could have been.
Well, then I'm going to make a blind guess at the state and say Illinois.
That's a good guess. That was Chicago County General Hospital from ER.
Sure.
Allison Lohuff. A comedy revolving around a group of teenage friends, their mishaps, and their coming of age, set in 1970s.
This is That 70s Show in Ohio. No?
That 70s Show in Wisconsin. Wisconsin.
Oh, you know why I said Ohio? Because they use Cleveland Rocks as their...
No, stupid. The Drew Carey Show does.
No. Yes? Okay. God.
I don't understand any part of what you just
said,
and we're
right.
All dumber for hearing it. Sarah D. Bunting.
Yes.
The continuing misadventures of neurotic stand-up comedian and his equally neurotic friends.
Seinfeld in New York?
Yes. The continuing misadventures of neurotic New York stand-up Jerry Seinfeld and his equally neurotic New York friends. Says
just
IMD.
Say Jewish. It's faster, Jack.
All right, Tara. Professional writer and amateur sleuth uses her intellect, charm, and persistence to get to the bottom of every crime she encounters.
Oh, God. Well, it's Murder, She Wrote. And I'm so sorry, Sarah. I think, because I'm not sure.
I'm not Jessica.
Okay.
I don't mind.
All right. Is this also Maine?
Yeah.
You may remember in every episode she is wearing a lobster plastic bib because it takes place in Maine.
And Cabot Cove.
All right, Allison.
Yep.
Our last question before our last score break.
Okay.
The life and adventures of the family in the 19th century American Midwest. The life and adventures of the family in the 19th century American Midwest.
Little House on the Prairie.
Little House on the Prairie. State is.
Oh, yeah. I'm supposed to know that for real.
There were a bunch.
Missouri.
No, it takes place in what state? We go.
Oh, I know.
Take a guess.
Missouri. I don't
know. Oh, I thought you had it when you said Minnesota.
Oh, sure.
But close.
I wanted to.
Means it's time for the scores to our Ariana.
Okay. I have 25 points. Sarah D. Bunting has 23 points. Allison Loaf has 21 points.
All right, Allison Loaf, you got it all to yourself.
Okay.
You could tie the game.
Here we go. This is our last Growthworth Equalizer Challenge Zone. We're starting off with classics. Mm-hmm. Which two wins, W-Y-N-N-S, played Jack Palance's handlers in 1956's Requiem for a Heavyweight? What were those two wins' names? Something Win and Another Win.
Steve Win and David Win.
Oh, very close. Ed and Keenan Win were the two blokes we were looking for. Hopefully it gets a little easier from here on out. Sitcoms.
Okay.
What lucky radio station has Les Nessman as its news manager?
WKRP in Cincinnati.
Yeah!
Drama. How many original episodes of Star Trek were shot? 78, 108, or 178?
78.
Correct.
Ooh.
All right, just need one of these last three. What bears, based on a popular candy, tasted good to NBC? I love that phrasing. It was great.
What bears based on a
popular candy tasted good to NBC? This is Kids and Games.
Wow. Honey bears? I don't know.
Anybody else remember the gummy bear cartoon?
Gummy bears bouncing here and there and everywhere?
Yep.
Oh man. I mean, I was going to say that, but it didn't make any... I couldn't figure out what it meant. Okay.
For society. I did not
remember that was a cartoon.
All right, stars is the next category. Your answer will be a celebrity of some sort. Mm-hmm. Your question. What writer did James Earl Jones play in Roots, The Next Generation? Sorry, The Next Generations.
What writer did he play?
Yes.
I'm ashamed. Alex Haley?
Hey!
You are correct, and that's all you need, but let's just do wild card. For shits and giggles, what sitcom's planet's children are hatched fully grown?
Oh, Orson?
No, close.
Mork?
You had it right.
Ork?
That's Ork.
Yeah. Ork.
We're from Mork.
Mork from Ork. Yeah, that's right.
All right.
Okay, Sarah D. Bunting has 23 points. Now Allison and I are tied.
All right.
Thank you, Adam Grosworth.
A handful of questions left for everybody. Now let's get back into it, starting with Sarah D. Bunting, still on vintage-ish TV.
All right.
The regulars of the bar share their experiences and lives with each other while drinking or working at the bar where everybody knows your name.
Aw, just in case. That is Cheers in Massachusetts.
You are correct, Tara.
Yes.
All right. I'm going to preface this one by saying this submission came to us almost a year ago. The story of a working class family struggling with life's essential problems, marriage, children, money, and parents-in-law.
Is this Roseanne in Illinois?
Yes, it is. Once was vintage, then current, and now back to the road to vintagosity.
Yep.
Allison.
Yep.
A high school mathlete
starts hanging out with a group of burnouts while her younger brother navigates his freshman year.
Freaks and Geeks, California?
Freaks and Geeks in Michigan. But you got that 1 point.
Yeah.
All right, get ready to hear a lot of redactions. Or Sarah. Okay. Chronicles liberal ex-hippies and their conservative son, daughters, and later youngest child. Let me know if you want to hear all that information again. I'll be happy to provide it.
I'm all set.
She's got it.
Well, just to give you the redactions again. There you go. Okay.
And then little sploosh. That is family ties.
If she gets the answer, I want everybody to do a la 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 after. All right. But only if she gets
it. Of course.
Ohio.
Yeah!
Oh, thanks, guys.
All right. Tari Ariano.
Yes.
Widower sheriff and his son live with Dee's aunt in with virtually no crimes to solve. Most of this time is spent calming down his cousin, deputy.
Okay.
I know it. I can't believe this.
I'm going to...
Whoops, sorry.
I haven't even said anything yet. I'm going to shoot my shot. I'm going to guess this is the Andy Griffith Show. Okay, and they were in the South. Is that Alabama? Oh, no. Sorry, Allison.
All right, Allison, you have no steel mills, but you know what the state was?
North Carolina.
North Carolina. Mayberry, sure. North Carolina. Correct.
Okay.
All right, Allison, let's see if you can get this one. The misadventures of an author turned innkeeper in rural and his friends.
Newhart or, okay, in Vermont.
Correct. 2 points.
Nice.
Sarah D. Buttick is a misanthropic women's shoe salesman with a miserable life. He hates his job, his wife is lazy, his son is dysfunctional, and his daughter is dim-witted and promiscuous.
Gosh.
Whoops. Oh my god, my finger died.
Dave!
Dave!
No, it's my apologies.
This is Married with Children.
Oh. What state? Can you remember the credits? I believe the credits give away the state.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. And I don't remember the state, but let's just guess. New York?
Incorrect. Illinois? The state was Illinois. I believe it takes place in the suburbs of Chicago. It. All right, back to Tara.
I just want to let everybody know something very exciting has happened, which is we are all tied
Holy
up.
Shit.
Oh my God.
All right, so counting that question we just had, everybody has 3 questions left. So Sarah has 2, everybody else has 3. Tara.
Okay. Yes.
Half brothers and trade between kinship and rivalry, both on the basketball court and in the hearts of their friends in the small but not so quiet town of...
Okay, well, I'm furious that this is in with vintage shows, but is this One Tree Hill?
It's vintagey. It's off. Yeah, it's been
where
off
the fuck were they? Are they in North Carolina?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Wow.
That's amazing.
Allison.
Yep.
4 women and 1 man share the common bond of loving someone in the U.S. Army. U.S. Army.
Is it Army Wives?
Nice.
All right. That's so I assume they're on a base somewhere or something. So where's it located? What state?
Texas.
Good guess. South Carolina.
Okay.
All right. Sarah D. Bunting, here is your second to last question. An angel offers a jaded police detective the chance to redeem her life. We got an angel, we got a city, we got a lady detective who needs to redeem things that are not coupons.
Angel?
Yeah.
He does do that, though. California.
An angel offers a jaded Oklahoma City police officer the chance to redeem her life. The show's saving grace.
Right.
And the state, most likely Oklahoma.
Yeah, Tara. Fuck that.
Yeah.
Exactly.
The daily trial. Wow. Trials and tribulations come up so much in these IMDb descriptions.
Also misadventures.
Yeah.
Those.
Mm-hmm.
The daily trials and tribulations of the... A television show host raising three mischievous boys with the help of his loyal co-host, loving wife, and eccentric neighbor. Those are all different people.
Right. This is Home Improvement. I don't know where they are, so I'm just going to guess because of Tim Allen that it's Michigan.
Hey! Nice. All right, Allison. Mm-hmm. The adventures of the fast-driving, rubber-burning boys of...
Yeah.
Got this.
Next time on the Dukes. It's the Dukes of Hazzard.
Dukes of Hazzard is correct.
In, God, in one of the... It's in North Carolina.
Incorrect.
Oh, shit.
Is Georgia again. Back to Georgia.
Is it?
All right, everybody's last question, so let's quickly get the scores.
That's right.
Okay. Let's see. Sarah D. Bunting has 28 points. Allison Lohuff has 30 points. I have 32 points.
All right. So we still got a possible tie here. Everybody's got to do their thing. Sarah D. Bunting. A newly graduated doctor is required to set up his practice in an eccentric town.
Northern Exposure in Alaska?
You are correct. 2 points.
Nice.
All Not right.
Strong.
For Tara.
Yep.
A retired baseball player becomes the housekeeper of an advertising executive. Together, okay. They raise their kids and with the help of man crazy mother.
Yeah. That's Who's the Boss. And I think they were in Connecticut.
Jesus Christ. Nice.
Wow. Okay.
Were they? It was such a Jersey show.
Okay.
For Allison. Uh-huh. Resplendent with authentic 1980s music, fashion, and vibe. Follows two undercover detectives and their extended team through the mean streets of...
Oh, that's not fair. It's Miami Vice in Florida.
It is Miami Vice in Florida. You are correct.
Well played, everyone.
Wow, that was a very hard-fought battle. Everyone did amazing. Sarah D. Bunting closed with 30 points. Allison had 32. I had 34.
Wow.
And you think the game's
close,
over?
Close.
I have information for you. It is not. We've been talking about states all day long. We got 50 of them. I want to hear them. Sarah D. Bunting, go.
We're just naming states?
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Maine.
New Hampshire.
Alabama.
Alabama, yes. Go.
Vermont.
Vermont, good. Go.
Connecticut.
Connecticut, also one.
Colorado.
Rhode Island.
Rhode Island. Little guy. Still counts.
New York.
New York. Kind of a big one. Live there. Good.
Florida.
Florida. Ugh, yep.
Jersey.
What? Old or new?
New.
Okay.
Pennsylvania.
Pennsylvania. Also one.
Texas.
Sorry. Ohio.
Good to go.
Maryland.
Mississippi.
My old friend Delaware.
Delaware. We're in Delaware.
Virginia.
Yes.
Georgia.
West Virginia.
Uh-huh.
North Carolina, has that been said?
Has not. You repeat something, you're out.
Louisiana.
South Carolina.
South Carolina, you betcha.
Tennessee.
Tennessee is what?
Tennessee and his ten to believe
it. You better believe it.
Arkansas.
Kentucky.
Kentucky.
Oklahoma.
North Dakota.
North Dakota.
South Dakota.
South Dakota.
Kansas.
Kansas.
Idaho. No, Utah.
Nebraska.
Missouri.
Oregon.
Oregon. Say it right. Everybody gets mad.
Oregon. Indiana.
Indiana.
Wyoming.
The state of Washington.
California.
Alaska.
New Mexico.
Getting down to it.
Arizona.
Hawaii.
Blame for that one. All right, here we go.
Yep.
Oh, Minnesota?
Oh, shit.
Oh, shit.
I don't remember what we said. No, that's out of state. Wisconsin is, though, right?
Good answer.
Has anyone said Arizona yet?
Arizona, you're out.
Damn! Good luck, everybody.
Oh, my God. What's left?
I don't want to press you, but we're going to need
Oklahoma?
An answer. Oklahoma. Oh, you fell into the trap. Sarah D. Bunting, just for shits and giggles, wrap it up. Unsaid state.
Iowa.
Also not mentioned, Illinois. Good old massive two shits. Michigan, Montana, Nevada, and Utah.
Oh,
way to go, Sarah.
All the bad states.
Sarah.
Guys, it pays to know your states.
It does.
It does.
You thought the game was over, but then wham, geography.
Mm-hmm. Second encore.
All right, guys, that is it for another episode of Extra Hot Crate. We chase the white dragon from Britain to Hong Kong and help you score more murdery mayhem on the international market with things like Private Eyes, Miss Sherlock, Agatha Christie's Criminal Games, No Offense, Happy Valley Methadones, and Money Heist. We then went around the dial with stops at One Day at a Time Season 3, American Soul, the documentary Studio 54. Is that right? I feel like we didn't talk about that.
No, we did.
And Big Mouth Valentine Special. Mademoiselle Caroline turned her extra credit into a mini game time before we crossed the channel for Joe's unsuccessful but oddly enjoyable charmed canon episode Morality Bites. We crowned winners and losers of the week, and Sarah, America's sweetheart, was the winner of this week's stately game time. Remember?
Oh, nice.
We're listening.
I am David T. Cole, and on behalf of Tara Ariano,
I'm orbing out of here.
Sarah D. Bunting.
Shit, you took mine like word for word.
What?
And Allison, original thought, low huff, who doesn't copy Sarah.
Look out for the duty man.
Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time right here. Just extra. Not great. I am the male child of my parents, and I'll outlive them and assume their assets and liabilities. Of a meek manner that is unlawfully gross. I am the male child of my parents, and the one that will outlive them. Of nothing that has been noted. So close your face hole. How can you speak about actions in the incorrect way? I am Homo sapiens, and I require familiar warmth in the same manner as my peers.